So tonight we're studying Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tirthankara Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. Chapter number 7, Knowledge of the Absolute. Text number 26. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vedaham Samatitani. Vartamanani Charjuna. Bhavishyani Chabhutani Mangtu Veda Nakoshchana. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here, the question of personality and impersonality is clearly stated. If Krishna, the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were Maya, material, as the impersonalists consider him to be, then, like the living entity, he would change his body and forget everything about his past life. Anyone with a material body cannot remember his past life, nor can he foretell his future life, nor can he predict the outcome of his present life. Therefore, he cannot know what is happening in the past, present, and future. Unless one is liberated from material contamination, he cannot know past, present, and future. Unlike the ordinary human being, Lord Krishna clearly states that he completely knows what happened in the past, what is happening in the present, and what will happen in the future. In the fourth chapter we have seen that Lord Krishna remembers instructing Vivishwan, the sun god, millions of years ago. Krishna knows every living entity because he is situated in every living being's heart as the super soul. But despite his presence in every living entity as super soul and his presence as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the less intelligent, even if he is able to realize the impersonal Brahman, cannot realize Sri Krishna as the Supreme Person. Certainly, the transcendental body of Sri Krishna is not perishable. He is just like the sun, and Maya is like a cloud. In the material world, we can see that there is the sun, and that there are clouds and different stars and planets. The clouds may cover all these in the sky temporarily, but this covering is only apparent to our limited vision. The sun, moon, and stars are not actually covered. Similarly, Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord. By his internal potency, he is not manifest to the less intelligent class of men. As it is stated in the third verse of this chapter, out of millions and millions of men, some try to become perfect in this human form of life, and out of thousands and thousands of such perfected men, hardly one can understand what Lord Krishna is. Even if one is perfected by realization of impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma, he cannot possibly understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, without being Krishna consciousness. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam yena Bhutale Svayam Rupaka Dhamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. So, Krishna says no one knows me. Of course, some know Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santaksa daiva hidayeshu valoka yanti yam shama shundara machintya ganasvarupam govindamari purusham tamaham vachami. Those persons whose vision has been purified by that very, very special ointment known as Premanjana, the ointment of love of God, they know Krishna. But they are such a small number that practically no one knows Krishna. Therefore, he says, no one knows me. Of course, in the spiritual world, everyone knows Krishna. But in this material world, practically no one knows Krishna. Many people claim to know Krishna, especially in India. Yes, I know it is Krishna, they very proudly say. Or one man told me in the Delhi airport, he said, very proudly said, we are all Krishna here. So they think they know Krishna, but the fact is they do not know Krishna. So that's actually a pretty pathetic situation, not to know Krishna. Just like a child who is somehow separated from his parents, and he doesn't even know who his parents are. It's a very sad, pathetic situation. A homeless child who doesn't even know who his parents are, that he could even go home. You see? It's a very, very sad situation. But no one knows Krishna. They are running mad after sense enjoyment, trying to be Krishna, trying to be the supreme enjoyer. But all of their attempts are simply futile. Mogasha moga karma no moga jnana vichetta saha adakshasim masaryam jayava prakritta mohinam shitaha. All of their fruit of activity, their culture of knowledge, everything is baffled, simply waste. They're going nowhere. It's like the hot rodder who, you know, puts the gas pedal to the floor and burns rubber. He makes a big, big noise, showing off his power, but he's going nowhere. So, Karmi, they are like hot butter, simply showing their power. But actually, it is puny, insignificant power. They are going nowhere. It is a very sad situation. Prabhupada would cry, actually, in Melbourne, in the morning walk. In the park. He was seeing on Monday morning all the commuters coming into town. He was crying. How their shama iva kevalam, how their life is being uselessly spoiled. This is the lamentation of Narottam Das Thakur. He is taking our position. Hari hari bipale janama gonaini. Although I've come to this human form, my Lord, I've spent this life uselessly. I did not care for Radha and Krishna, and so I swallow poison foolishly. This is our position here. We've turned on our back on our eternal well-wisher. That person is giving us everything. Eko bahunam yova dadati karma. That Supreme Person is supplying us everything. We've turned our back on him. foolishly, cutting our own throats actually, by doing so, drinking poison. So this is how important it is to come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. It's so important. That is our only hope, actually, out of the quagmire, this repetition of birth and death. If we can somehow be fortunate enough to come into contact with the bona fide spiritual master, by the mercy of Krishna and Guru, then we can get the seed of bhakti planted in the heart. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagavanji Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. After wandering in this Brahmanda, up and down the Ferris wheel of birth and death, through millions and millions of repetitions, one living entity, Kona Bhagyavanji, one living entity who is very, very fortunate, he gets that mercy of Guru and Krishna, and he gets the bhakti lata bij, the seed of bhakti planted in his heart. Now you know, seed, it can die if it's not properly cared for. You may plant a seed, but that is not automatic. Requires cultivation. That seed has to be cultivated. At the present time, we may plant a bhakti seed in this Kali Yuga, but there are so many ferocious weeds growing in that garden of the heart. Ferocious weeds. Lust weeds, greed weeds, anger weeds. So many ferocious weeds are growing in the garden of the heart. And if that wasn't enough of a problem, there's these crazy elephants wandering around, destroying everything. Mad elephants, hati matta. That is called Vaishnava aparadha. So the weeds, lust, anger, greed, illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, pride, fault finding. These weeds are there, and there's the mad elephants of Vaishnava aparadha. So if we are going to have any hope of getting out of this hellish nightmare right now that we're caught up in, you see, and we have to become very serious to cultivate the seed of bhakti. Very, very serious. Actually, it's a matter of life and death. It's a very serious thing. It is not joking matter. It is a very serious thing. If we properly cultivate this process of Krishna bhakti, this will be the last time we take birth in this material world. If we don't practice, we don't properly cultivate this process of bhakti yoga, then again taking birth. So now we've gotten this opportunity. Let us not waste this opportunity. Hovering in the platform of karma mishra bhakti, let us strive for pure devotion. Of course, it is a gradual process, but we should not make it any more gradual than it has to be. Prabhupada pushed me to become a pure devotee. He told me in one letter, he said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. That's a pretty heavy instruction. Now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So how can one see Krishna face to face unless all the dirt is washed out of the heart? And when the heart is contaminated with millions of lifetimes of crud, how does one get all that dirt out? One has to become very, very serious to become Krishna conscious. Especially that death can come at any moment. We don't know how long we're going to live. The other day we were going down the freeway at 75 miles an hour in Illinois, and all of a sudden, I was sitting there doing emails, all of a sudden, kawam! I thought it was over. Krishna! I called out to Krishna thinking, this is the end. It's finished. By Krishna's grace, we survived. The other car was totaled and we just got scratched. But it really brought home the fact that I can die at any minute. And one has to always be prepared. One has to be always prepared to leave the body. My godmother, Guru Govinda Maharaj, he was giving lecture. He was preaching, pravachan, in Mayapur. He left the body. Just because I'm sitting on the Vyasasan doesn't mean I have some immunity. Is it? One can die at any time. So we have to become very sober and very serious about Krishna consciousness. That's the point. If we enter into the proper sphere, then we have nothing to fear of leaving the body. Nothing at all to fear. And Srila Prabhupada explained, deathlessness begins at initiation. One actually enters into immortality when one takes complete shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, fully surrenders to Guru Maharaj with every thought, every word, and every deed. Then you're actually no longer living in the material world. Even though you may appear to be, you're living in Vaikuntha. So we have to check ourselves. Am I doing that? Am I actually living in a spirit of serious Krishna consciousness right now? Am I very sober about my actual position? My very shaky position in this material body and the solid shelter I have at the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna. Am I sober and very serious about it? Or am I, kind of halfway, taking the whole thing rather casually? My Vartma Pradarshaka Guru, Vishnu Jan Maharaj, who brought me to this movement, he very aptly stated once that casual means casualty. So if we take the process very lightly, very cheaply, ho-hum, obla-di, obla-da, life goes on, kind of an attitude. Not very serious about being fixed in pure bhakti. As much as I possibly can muster the serious, sincere mood at every minute. If I'm not in that sphere, then I'm risking. I'm putting myself in a very risky position of having to take birth again. So when we read these wonderful, enlightening words of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, we must go very deeply into them. Every single word has the power to liberate us. Every single word can pull us out of this nightmare that we're in right now, bodily consciousness. We're having a nightmare right now. You know you're having a nightmare right now? What is that nightmare? I am male. I am female. I'm American. I am Indian. It's a nightmare. It's actually a nightmare. The pure spirit soul who is qualified with unlimited freedom of activity in the service of the Lord has now become a prisoner in a cell composed of mucus, bile, air, vomit, stool, urine, pus, etc. It's a hellish place to be. We're so conditioned to it, we think, oh, it is very nice. Just like the worm. Someone felt sorry for the poor worm in the stool and they pulled him out to give him a nice home that he went crawling back into the stool. So that is our position. We're very attached to this stool leg, this body. So by hearing these enlightening words from Srila Prabhupada, coming down, very carefully handed down by the great Mahajanas. Mahajano Gena Gata Sapanta. By hearing these very, very sublime words of wisdom, we can be pulled out of this bewildered state of unconsciousness. We can actually come to the realization, not just theoretical realization of Metta-bhakti, but practical, tangible reawakening of our original spiritual identity will come in due course. That day will come if we stick to this process very seriously. That day will come and we'll actually realize who we are in our relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada, this is a very high level thing, but it's actually stated in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada gave the highest level thing right there in the beginning introduction. Swarup Siddhi. That day will come when the Swarup, the original form that we have in Krishna's pastime, will regain that position. Somehow we lost that. Paradise was lost by our envy, by our foolish desire to try to be a competitor of the Lord. But now, hopefully, we've learned our lesson. That this system of trying to be God just doesn't work. If you can't beat him, join him. We can't defeat Krishna and take over his position. So why not just surrender? This is intelligence. Why be on the losing side when you can be on the winning side? The devotees are on the winning side. Because they align themselves with the Supreme Authority. Non-devotees, they may think they're winning, but they are simply losing. That's simply losing. How they can win? Even they become the wealthiest man in this world, they have to die without taking one penny with them. Even they become powerful, they become rich, they become famous, everything is lost at death. Everything is lost. And they are thinking that they will live forever with their name, their fame, their wealth, etc. Ahani, ahani, bhutani, ganchantiya lamalayam sheshashtavram ichchami kim vishcharyam mataparam. It is stated by Yudhisthira that every minute countless numbers of living entities are being dragged to the court of Yamaraj. But those who are remaining here, they think, oh, I will live very long. Yudhisthira Maharaj says, there's nothing, kim mascharya ataha, kim, he says, there's nothing more wonderful than this. Nothing more amazing than this. This is the most amazing phenomenon that's going on. Everyone thinks they will live forever and ever and ever. They're making all their plans to live on and on and on and on. But cruel death will not allow them to do that. When their time has come, get out, finished. You cannot buy one extra minute when the time of death has come. You can't do anything. Therefore, we simply have to learn now how to surrender fully to Krishna and leave it up to Him. The devotee has no anxiety. Death means, oh, I just walked from, just like now, we came, we were on the outside, seeing the nice fountain, and we came into this room. Was there any difficulty going from one room to another? No. So for a devotee, that is death. You just go from one room to another, no big deal. You're in one room doing devotional service, and now you've been called to go to a different room because then you're doing devotional service. That's Krishna consciousness. So by seriously following this pathway of Krishna consciousness, we can become completely transcendental to all the ups and downs of material nature. We can become impervious to the suffering conditions of the material existence. But you have to become humble to enter into it. As long as we're cocky, as long as we're proud, as long as we're conceited, as long as we're haughty, as long as we're strutting around like I'm, you know, big shot, we're blocking ourselves from entering into that sublime atmosphere of Krishna bhakti. We have to become very, very, very humble. And then we can really sweetly chant Hare Krishna mantra like anything. So much nectar will be there. This name of Krishna, if it's properly chanted, is so sweet, it's inconceivably sweet. Just like we have experience glub jamun. Everyone likes the glub jamun. Very nice. So much nice sugar cane juice or sugar juice. Just imagine if they soak them in sugar cane juice. We take the granulated sugar and make sugar juice. But it's very tasty. Just imagine a glub jamun that has so much nectar that it fills up the entire universe. You see, that is Krishna's name. Krishna's name is the ultimate glub jamun. One pure utterance of Hare Krishna mantra contains more sweetness, more rasa, more juice than the entire universe can contain. So we simply have to learn how to chant Hare Krishna. In a humble state of mind, thinking ourselves lower than that piece of straw on the sidewalk. Being more tolerant than that oak tree, or that elm tree, or that pine tree. See, being willing to offer, to bow down at the feet of anyone and everyone, whether they respect us or not. See. In such a state of mind, one can go on chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, without cessation. Even for millions of years, one could go on chanting. We find 16 rounds to be troublesome. We're finding 16 rounds to be troublesome, but one who is actually develop a true taste for the name, he would find 16 million rounds just to be getting started, just warming up. So if we take this process very seriously, someone may think, well, you know, I prefer laughing and joking. I mean, why is Sankarshan Prabhu speaking in such a heavy, serious way? What's wrong with him? Is he not happy, or what's the problem? Is it? But I have an insider secret for you. The more you become very, very serious about Krishna consciousness, the more you taste the sweetest nectar, inconceivably sweet nectar, at every minute. Just be hee-haw, chuckling and laughing. This is in the modes of nature. Of course, there is transcendental chuckling and laughing. And that's very nice. But if all we are doing is chuckling and laughing and we can't become very sober, then we're missing the real transcendental platform. So we need to develop a very, very deep sobriety. And in that position, we will taste the sweetest nectar. This was a shock for me, actually, when I was a new person coming to this movement. Because back in the counterculture days, hippie movement, we thought, you know, stay high forever. That was our philosophy. Go on the ultimate trip that you never come down from, that you always stay high on. That was the idea. So I was attending one program with Vishnujana Maharaj giving the lecture, and I went into the kitchen at one point to get a drink of water, and somehow or other he came in too, and it was just him and me alone in the kitchen. He looked at me very compassionately and very seriously, and he said, "You have to become sober." And I was going, "Wow." And I didn't say anything. It's like, but in my mind I was going, "Wow." Because he was in a very high place of spiritual bliss, divine intoxication. And he was saying, "You have to become sober." So I knew now that, you know, just being intoxicated like we were trying to be was a dead end. The real position of sweet transcendental nectar was to become very, 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 very sober about who I am, what is my identity, what is the identity of the Supreme Absolute Truth, what is my relationship with that Supreme Absolute Truth, who is that Supreme Absolute Truth. All of these subject matters, I realized I had to become very, very serious about this if I wanted to taste the nectar that he was tasting. So we thank you very much for your very sober and serious hearing. And we'd like to ask if there's any questions. Yes, Prabhu.
How do we understand transcendental personality to joke a lot?
How do we understand transcendental joke?
Transcendental personalities that joke a lot. Obviously very exalted and saintly souls, but they joke a lot.
That is also there. I know the other day I was attending Tamal Krishna Goswami's Vyas Puja in Dallas, and they're showing some videos of his lectures. And since I do a lot of lecturing nowadays, I was really seriously studying his style. You know, I was watching exactly how he was giving a lecture. And I noticed he didn't crack a smile the whole time. He was very serious, extremely serious. After the lecture was over, then he was smiling and chuckling. But when he was actually delivering the lecture, it was not one single smile. I was taking notes. He didn't smile the whole time. Everything was like dead serious. Whole lecture, every single second. He didn't break that mood the whole lecture. And I know by seeing him develop that Texas Yatra over many years, how successful he was in his preaching. And he developed, and that's still going strong, in Dallas and Houston. Very successful projects, very dedicated to him, even though he's physically departed. Many years ago he departed, and still they're going on with great power, and you still feel his presence there. So it really made a strong impression on me. But he could be, if you're sitting at Prashadam, then it was a whole other thing. very lighthearted, all kinds of humor, laughing. But when it came to him giving a lecture, oh, it was very, very serious. So I learned something by seeing that. When the lecture was being given, the philosophy was being presented, you know, in the Vyasa-san, it's very, very serious. Extremely serious. Not one smile the whole time. Not one even slight smile the whole time. Until the lecture ended, and then he was talking about other things. And then he was very... the whole mood changed immediately. The lecture was over. Completely lighthearted smile. And everyone was laughing, you know. Completely changed when the lecture ended. So, those who can... we see practically that those who are the most sober, they laugh. They have the biggest laugh also. Prabhupada is the example. Who could be more sober and more heavy than Prabhupada? But who could laugh? Sally Agarwal was giving her remembrance of Prabhupada. When he laughed, it was oceanic. His laugh took in the whole universe. So, that is actually the proper understanding. That those who are the most sober, they also have they have the most jolly laugh also. Does that answer your question? My hearing isn't real good. I wasn't sure I heard exactly what you said. I'm hard of hearing. So. Did I answer your question? Okay. It's hard for me to hear all the words. So, yeah, make it real loud.
Okay, I heard Dhanavir Maharaj. Mm. I went to his college, and one time, like he was saying, like, we were talking about sobriety and how you just have to, you know, his attitude was like what one devotee said. He said that devotees, they always know what to do on the weekend. It's like they're never bored.
Devotees do what? And you're competing now with the children.
The devotees, they always know what to do on the weekend. He said we're never bored.
Devotees are never bored.
Yeah, so we always know what to do on the weekend.
Yes, devotees know what to do on the weekend, that's right. Karmi, they don't know what to do on the weekend. They work hard and they think, well, how am I going to join my senses this weekend? Well, I tried hang gliding and, you know, I tried this and that. Yeah, it's a fact. They're miserable even when they try to enjoy. We know exactly what we're going to do. We're going to have kirtan, we'll have hear a nice lecture, we'll enjoy the arti ceremony, we'll have nice prasadam, you know, we'll go out and distribute some books and taste the nectar of pushing forward Lord Chaitanya's movement. We have unlimited nectar. We have unlimited stock of nectar available for us. Preaching Krishna consciousness is so sweet, it's just, there's no comparison to preaching. Anyone who gets into preaching, they know it's this divine intoxication. And you can, the more you do it, the sweeter it gets. You can go on, you know, I mean, I remember when I was preaching in Turkey, I think it was last year. We had an incredible success with the Muslims who'd never even heard about Krishna. We had a whole hall full of Muslims chanting Hare Krishna mantra. And they were really in bliss. We showed a video. Some of you have seen the video of it. But they were so intensely relishing Krishna's name. And then at the end, they came up. We offered the books, Bhagavad Gita in Turkish language. And they came forward. The leader of the group came up first with his money. And then, I mean, we didn't have enough. We sold out the books in 5 minutes. Everything we carried wasn't enough. And I was tasting so much nectar from that preaching that I actually forgot I was in Istanbul, Turkey. I came out into the street. I was thinking, where am I? I forgot where I was. I was so intoxicated on the nectar of preaching and distributing Prabhupada's books. I forgot where I was for a minute. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in Istanbul, Turkey. Wow. This just happened in Istanbul, Turkey. So yeah, the nectar of preaching, distributing books, distributing prasadam, distributing the holy names is inconceivably sweet. We don't have to, you know, save our money for a trip to Disney World to try to have fun on our vacation. We can just chant Hare Krishna, study Prabhupada's books, associate with devotees, and dive into an unlimited ocean of nectar. Nama Mrita Sindhu is in. Is it that? Questions? Any questions? Any answers? Yes.
Would you like to tell us more about the recent travels that you've done? You usually have interesting, you've told us about Turkey, and now that I know you usually have interesting travels that you've been, so if you can
tell more about our traveling and preaching? Yes. Yeah, we've got down an annual routine now. We do a European tour in the spring, and then we do a world tour in the fall. Then we do some North American preaching in the summer. We find that by doing this, it snowballs, and of course we're doing the internet thing at the same time. And it just seems to be always increasing and becoming more enlivened. It's always increasing. Now we've just been invited to... somebody's inviting us to Monterrey, Mexico, paying a major portion of our airfare. As soon as we get back on the road tour, we're flying to Monterrey and... it's just amazing. By keep staying absorbed in preaching, it just increases. If one always, by staying in this preaching mood, we had a very wonderful tour in Bulgaria recently. It was a very nice tour. We did travel. We went traveling some kirtan all over the country with a group of devotees. We would do Harinam, and then they would rent. They would have a hall rented in the evening, and they would advertise my lecture. And many people, it's not in America, you can't do that. You can't just go to a town and advertise a lecture and fill up the hall. In the 60s you could do that. But now, you know. So it was very nice. Fill up a hall and then give a lecture and sell so many books just by giving a lecture. People line up to the book table. Very enlivening thing. So, in this way, Krishna is giving us many opportunities. Many parts of the world, we're just trying to take advantage of it. Understanding that these material bodies is temporary, so as long as they're functioning, do as much as we can to make a big noise for Prabhupada on this planet. We're actually meant to revolutionize this planet. We're not meant just to sit comfortably in our temples eating chapatis, rice dal, and gulab jamuns. Although we do that, that energizes us. But we're actually meant for preaching, for making a revolution on this planet. Creating a whole army of pure devotees. The Rithviks say there's only one Acharya, Prabhupada. But Prabhupada told us in Mayapur, he said, now we are 10,000. He said, then we will grow to 100,000. Then to 1 million, and then to 10 million. He says, there will be no scarcity of Acharyas. So how these Rithvik people can say only one Acharya? When Prabhupada is saying 10 million Acharya. See, this is requires just how much common sense does it require? When Prabhupada is saying there will be 10 million Acharyas, and they are saying only one Acharya? They are saying the Acharya is wrong? That is their great glorification of Prabhupada, to say that the Acharya, the founder Acharya, is wrong, that we will have 10 million Acharyas? foolishness, simply foolishness. We have to actually follow. If we take the words of Prabhupada, we give our full faith, yasya deve para bhaktir tata deve tata guru. If we give our full faith to the words of Srila Prabhupada, and if we preach with enthusiasm, with purity, with determination, then the results will be strikingly wonderful, and we're experiencing them. It's amazing to see how by preaching, what kind of results anyone can get. You don't have to be a sannyasi. You don't have to have any position. All you have to have is Prabhupada's books and faith that Prabhupada is giving the absolute truth, that he is the most powerful acharya, confirmed by the kancha. So we thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.